men and women of discomfort. We're a shame-free zone. We're not interested in shame. We're interested in challenging and calling up and inviting more from the person, more honesty, more humility, more freedom. I think there's massive potency, but none of it happens if you're not honest. None of it happens if you're not courageous, because we not only suffer together, but we're suffering for a particular purpose. We're kind of at arms together, moving towards the kinds of people that we all know in our guts we want to be, if only we'd find the courage and the honesty to move in that direction. As humans, we prefer the path of least resistance. We crave convenience, the payoff without the price. But when our lives revolve around comfort, it doesn't deliver. Living in perpetual comfort leaves us weak and asleep. This podcast is an invitation to flip that script, to choose the unlikely path, to get the life you really want through voluntary discomfort. This is Strong and Awake. I'm Dane Sanders.
Hey, Dane.
Hey, Mitch.
How have you been?
I'm well, man. I'm really well.
The topic at hand is truth, honesty. My truth, your truth, whose truth, you know, there's going to be lots of potential triggering phrases.
It's so funny. I was reminded recently, you know, the great Pontius Pilate, when he was condemning Jesus of Nazareth, you know, the question he asked back then, thousands of years ago, what is truth? And before he, you know, trying to figure out whether Jesus was going to go die or the other guy. And it's profound, right? Like, what a question. What is truth? As if I could ever really access it. You know, we have so many, we live in an era where, you know, significant, smart people actually are entertaining the possibility that we're not even living in a sense of reality. This is all just, what do they call it?
A simulation.
A simulation, right. And, you know, even that idea of a simulation, that's not a new idea. That's been around for thousands of years. If you read some of the ancients, they've talked about these kind of ideas. But I think at the end of the day, there is something that is so. Even if it is a simulation that we're in the midst of, then the simulation is the thing that is so. There's so many ways to talk about it. The story I make up about reality is, you know, or my map of reality. I like the map metaphor. This was taught to me by one of my mentors, that the map of reality, it's almost like a painting. There's that old French painter, ça n'est pas pipe. This is not a pipe. It's a picture of a pipe, an illustrated pipe.
Oh, yes.
And the idea is that, of course, it's not a pipe. It's a picture of a pipe. But how can someone say it's not a pipe? Because it's clearly a pipe, but it's not a pipe. And I think a painting of a pipe is different than a pipe. Just like another kind of philosophical kind of inquiry, there's this essay I read called What It's Like to Be a Bat. And the article would basically made the case for, if you could know every species, you were the world's expert of everything there is to know about bats and, you know, kind and type and genus and, you know, all the different pieces and details and, you know, every hair on every body, all the things. Here's the one thing you'd never know: what it's like to be a bat. And what do we do with this kind of distinction? And how do we relate with it? And my own bias is, on the one hand, it can be very discouraging. Like, are we ever going to get to reality? And the good news is, no. Realities, we get to plumb the depths of our inquiry around reality the whole of our lives and beyond, hopefully. But I would argue that having a humble disposition about what we think we know is probably a good resource. Like, for example, we were talking about this before we started the conversation today. This phrase, which is very common in our culture these days, is share your truth. What is my truth? And you see this, you know, people in popular culture, professional athletes, I hear it a lot in particular in other places when they're talking about mental health, for example. They'll say, you know, I'm just sharing my truth about my experience. I get that. At first, when I heard that, I got really irritated. And I thought, like, are you saying there is no truth when you're making it so subjective? And yet I've become more sympathetic to it, because it's really just a declaration of, like, this is my best take on truth. This is my vantage point, my map of reality. And in the best cases, people who say that mean I'm open to being wrong. There's more for me to learn. I have a lot of access points if I would be courageous enough to go look at it. Some people, of course, don't mean that. They mean my truth, and everyone has their own truth, and there's no real thing as truth. And therefore, we're just going to have a big fight about who's stronger, faster, has a higher status, and that truth is going to trump the day. That's kind of a boring conversation to me. But if we can still hold on to the idea that reality is, and we can have vantage points on it, and we can have a humble disposition toward it, we have an incredible opportunity to get curious and find out more if we're willing to be honest. And that is so difficult to do, because while we're trying to figure out what is so, we're also living in a world where it feels like we're competing for status, and we want to look good and feel right and not be shamed or feel badly. And these conflicting motivations and incentives are at play constantly. And in the middle of that, we're trying to figure out, gosh, if I'm not willing to be honest to say what I don't know, or stop short of claiming that I know more than I do, gosh, we get ourselves into trouble. We set the table in such a way that we limit our learning. And I know I'm guilty of that, have been my whole life. And like when I speak in hyperbole, or I make claims to things, like someone says, oh, have you read such and such? Like even a moment ago when I said I read that article, What It's Like to Be a Bat, I remember I was assigned that article. I wondered, did I actually read it, or did I read a synopsis of it? Or like, I don't know the truth on all those answers. Even when I think back, like it was grad school, it was kind of a crazy time. I probably skimmed it, and it's just so tempting to overstate. And I have found the more I'm willing to understate, or at least state things plainly, and get curious, a lot of opportunity opens up. Can you relate to any of this, Mitch?
Can I ever? I think there are so many different moments that kind of spoke to me, or in a less woo-woo turn of phrase, just stood out to me. Mm-hmm. And for me, I've been on my own journey of being more intellectually honest with myself and doing that without holding judgment. I think oftentimes we might blame culture or Disney or whatever you want to blame for our coddling culture, our pursuit of comfort. And one of those kind of subversive things is a lack of honesty with ourselves, because we're afraid of that judgment that comes with it, or the weight that comes with truth or honesty. And I think I've kind of succumbed to that lie, or I believed that lie, and have been so used to that pattern of thinking that in what I think is less malicious, but more out of self-preservation, have avoided being honest with myself or with others, sometimes subconsciously or unbeknownst to me.
Yeah.
Which is why I think, one, acknowledging that this is a map, that this is something that can get more detailed with greater exploration and discovery and study. But also with practice. You can't make a more detailed map without raising the sails and getting out there. And I think one thing that I've been navigating, to keep using this map metaphor, is how do I do those things without feeling guilt, maybe? Because like you said, Dane, in the past in conversations, The truth is, like, yes, you might have missed the mark, or you are guilty, but to feel that guilt without shame and without the self-loathing or the hiding or the retreating that often comes with that. So as part of what we do here in Men and Women of Discomfort is we get to hold account mm-hmm. for what we have committed to as a part of this community and committed to for ourselves. And
let's talk about that. I'm sort of cut off, but yeah. You're inspiring me a little bit. So like, because what I'm hearing, there's this tension, right? So I'm hearing you say, how do we acknowledge where we've missed the mark? And if you want to call it guilt, you want to call it, I don't care what you call it, but sure. Like you missed the mark. You wanted this and you didn't do this, you did this, okay? And, or you did that. And there is a desire to avoid a certain kind of feeling, and let's call that shame or bad. And I'm not a psychologist, so I don't want to pretend to be, although I've spent a lot of time with psychologists. And I don't think you go for how can I not feel that feeling, because that's honestly what sends a lot of people, at least myself, in a tailspin. It's like I'm really willing to do whatever it takes to not feel that feeling. That's what I'm going for. And I think that perpetuates the running away, the hiding, the wishing it would just go away. No, I didn't do it. Oh, no, you did it. You know, and it's so difficult. It's so difficult for every human on this planet because we all miss the mark, like all of us. There's no one who doesn't. And even our heroes, like most every hero we have, they were heroes because at some point they were just they've missed the mark so badly. I think of Kobe Bryant as someone who I had such esteem for as an athlete, the late, great Kobe Bryant, the Kobe Bryant who, you know, inspired millions and continues to, you know, he was in Newport Beach. I was in Newport Beach. Our daughters were in a play together at one point. Like my son and I had these amazing kind of, you know, magic moments. We went to the NBA All-Star game in Los Angeles when he won the MVP one year, and we both would wear Lakers jerseys. And it was just this amazing kind of experience. And it's, you know, it's public knowledge. He also had some massive moral failures, you know? And I think one of the things that buoyed him was his performance on the court. People just kind of forgave the other part. And if he hadn't performed on the court, well, what would have happened, you know, in those kinds of cases? And my gosh, it gets so complex so quickly. So my point is simply, it's not to pick on Kobe. I'll pick on me. Like my moral failures left and right, if you actually got into the mix. And I know every single person who's listening or a part of this conversation right now, if they're honest with themselves, we've all missed the mark so badly. And the question becomes, what do you do with that? And one thing I'll point to, and it's a nod for you and I both, and several, you know, gazillion people around the planet. If you have a faith tradition that accounts for the human condition, that allows for, to my knowledge, Christianity is particularly helpful in this regard around grace. You know, that's a very helpful resource to navigate these kinds of things. But even the Christian friends that I have, myself included, who have access to grace, don't lay claim to it right when you need it. Because if we fully lived in the reality of the grace that we have available to us, shame it just wouldn't show up because it's been taken care of. Neither would fear. We'd be relaxed in our kind of disposition. And I think on some level, really our discipline, even at Men and Women of Discomfort, whether or not people have a faith tradition who are participating, I see them actually moving in the direction of experiencing grace. We're a shame-free zone. We're not interested in shaming, even while we're interested in challenging and calling up and inviting more from the person, more honesty, more humility, more freedom from agency, because they're willing and able to raise their hand and move forward incrementally, one day at a time. I think there's massive potency, but none of it happens if you're not honest. None of it happens if you're not courageous. It's why people who I get to do Men and Women of Discomfort with are practically my best friends, because we not only suffer together, but we're suffering for a particular purpose. We're kind of at arms together, moving towards the kinds of people that we all know in our guts we want to be, if only we'd find the courage and the honesty to move in that direction. And that's what I see you doing as my friend, Mitch. That's what I see our whole community when we're at our best. And also why it often takes some time. There's, you know, at the beginning of the journey with Men and Women of Discomfort, it's really about often really thin things. Like people want to get in shape, or they want to look good in the mirror when they get out of the shower, or they want to, you know, whatever, remember what it felt like to be an athlete when they were in their 20s or whatever their thing is. And I'll just say, I'll own all of those. That's my own personal motivation. But, you know, having done this a handful of times, more than a handful of times, what I've every single round, I can't plumb the depths of, I'm getting closer to reality. I'm more humbled in the process, but I'm also more able, I'm stronger, I'm more awake, I'm more able to love others. I have a greater capacity to not feel shame, to experience God's grace, to live into the fullness of who I was meant to become and actually become it. And that's the part that I just go, oh my gosh, like super practically, it sounds kind of silly, but today I was driving to CrossFit and we have some construction right by our house. And I pulled out of our neighborhood. I knew the construction was there. I was running late, totally on me. And we live in a small town where you can get away with stuff in traffic. And I looked to my right and there was this like mile long line of people who had been waiting in line for it to go, because it was a one way in both directions. And I literally just pulled a U-ey. I've done this several times this week. I pull a Yui in front of everybody else. One construction guy is yelling at me. And I come down to this other guy. And they're literally like, there's electrical lines going where I'm supposed to drive. And this guy comes running over and he's really upset. And I kept my window up and I had my sunglasses on, like playing all the games, right? That are human to play. Because I had the power. And somewhere in the conversation, that transaction happened where I realized how arrogant of me that I thought I am this privileged, that I should be able to do whatever the hell I want and drive where I want and do what I think. And in the face of obvious missing it, like where I was cheating, because I started talking through the window and I said to the guy, like, you guys are really disorganized up there. Like, if your pylons were a different kind of setup or whatever. And even as I was saying the words, I was like, I am a liar. I am a deceiver. I am missing the mark in real time. And I claim to be the leader of men and women of discomfort. Are you kidding me? I can't live in the discomfort of what I'm in the middle of. And somewhere in the middle of the conversation, as my words were coming out, this guy was so pissed. Finally, I rolled down the window and I actually said the pylon thing out loud. And he said, no, that's not true. The pylons are set up because we have to have a gate for the people coming up to come up and the people to go down. And there's no way to not do that. And I literally said, you're totally right. I am totally wrong. You are totally right. Will you please forgive me? And here's the amazing part. This guy instantly shifted. Like, I'm confident that I could have just been an ass, gotten through the intersection, kept on going, felt entitled, moved on. And my map of reality was like, I'm special and I'm awesome and I get to do whatever the hell I want. And I would have ruined his day. And it could have had a ripple effect where that guy could have gone on and been a jerk to his wife or his kids. And it just was one last straw on a day where he's never kind of appreciated for the work he's doing or whatever. And it was so micro. And I was the one that was guilty, 100% guilty. And all I needed to do was to see it and to stop it and to say it. Honestly, I didn't feel shame. I just felt like, that's wrong. What's right is he's right. You're right. I'm wrong. And he just relaxed and he's like, no problem, dude. All good. We're great. And off he went. And the story I make up about him is I didn't ruin his day. I didn't set in motion a ripple effect that we do this all the time as humans constantly, but it's so unnecessary. So unnecessary. If only we can get in tune with reality, which is sometimes humbling, sometimes humiliating, but it's always redeemable. And I want to be the kind of guy who's willing to do that quicker. How fast can I get off of my arrogance and onto a path of living well, of I feel better, he feels better, you know, and we're all good. But it could have been a nightmare. And I think oftentimes if we could just have 1% less of those moments happen where we can recover quickly, it's amazing, I think, how much our world would get better. And this is very practical. This isn't like woo-woo idealistic stuff. This is like, no, this is how people get triggered, and really bad things happen downstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so easy to see how that affects us as we're navigating life with the map that we've drawn.
That's right.
But when we're leading others with that map or bumping up against others with that same map, it can really create some serious kind of collateral damage, like you said, right. Or positive change.
That's right.
I was listening to, I think it was Simon Sinek, either a podcast or reading. I'm not sure how I consumed this, but it's in my brain. And he was talking about kind of company culture and values specifically. And he said, so often he sees companies that say, you know, we value honesty and we value X, Y, Z. And he's like, those aren't values. Those are nouns. Like, where's the verb? Where's the action in that? And he said, no. Instead of saying we value honesty, he said, you should instead switch that out for tell the truth.
That's it.
Like, there's a certain generative aspect and action associated with these values. And that's what I love about this conversation and what we're doing at Men and Women of Discomfort. And the story you just told is that, sure, you value honesty. I'm sure you would say that. But like, you spoke the truth. You told the truth in that moment. And not only does that cultivate truth, honesty in that moment, but it also pulls in all of these other things, humility. And I would argue that not only does it cultivate it, but in its best form, it's it's planted alongside all of those things, and that's where it can thrive. So what action can we take when, okay, we value honesty. I'm sure everyone listening or watching this would say that they value honesty. Well, where do we start? What can we do in the small moments, in traffic, in conversations with ourselves, as we're becoming more aware of those stories that we're telling ourselves?
Yeah, I love that question. And I have found, like, whoever the most intimate relationship is in your life, this is where it's going to, I think, show up most often. Mm. The gold is in the upset. So you have some upset with the person who's most connected to you in your world, or, you know, the people who are in closest proximity. All my best friends I've had the most conflict with. And it's not by surprise. It's because we've recovered from those upsets. And the question becomes, how do we recover? How do we get closer to reality, not just my truth? And I can't think of a single instance where, when I led with an upset happens, person A, person B, there's an upset, and I'm person A, and I say to person B, you're the problem. You messed up. You did, like, I'm trying to think of any situation where that has bore fruit. In contrast, maybe there was where person B was, like, totally indicted or whatever. But almost every time, I'm an active collaborator in the upset. And if I can get curious around my contribution to the upset, that's the part of my truth that I want to pay attention to. That's the gold. And if I can lead with my own individual contribution to an upset, that's the truth I want to put on display. And if I can become, like, that's my habit, that's my default, that's my natural response to things, that is what opens up the most possibility in the relationship. And bigger picture, it opens up more access to reality. Reality is what we're going for. Reality is what we want to embrace and participate with. But reality is that thing that if we don't lead with humility, we don't lead with curiosity, neutrality, thinking through our contribution to an upset, it's very, very difficult. And of course, this is really hard to do when you've been offended, when someone actually has done something really awful to you. And I don't want to minimize those realities. I'm not speaking to if you were victimized. But even if you were victimized, the path out of that is to give up your victim status. The path out of that is to go, what do I do now that that's already happened? I'm not taking responsibility for being victimized. I'm taking responsibility for my situation on the other side of that and saying, am I contributing to extending that even further? Or am I contributing to finding my way to a better possibility, to something more? And in most cases, people who resist that, in my experience, they resist it because they simply aren't interested in learning more about reality. They're so committed to their perceptions as they're showing up for themselves, the role they're playing in the upset, that maybe wanting to feel superior or wanting to win. You can't win in relationships. You perpetuate. You want the relationship to extend. You mentioned Simon Sinek. This is the infinite game he speaks so much of. And that's the trick. If there was something else I could discover, would I want to know about it? That's the first step. And the second is, well, the way to know about it is to get curious around your contribution to the breakdown. And if I can faithfully pursue that, I can find my way. And going back to that first conversation around grace, like, maybe even get to a place where you might be the giver of grace, the person who can actually hear your partner, the person that you're connected to most, the most intimate person in your whole world, in a whole new light, break something open for them. That's powerful. But it's not for the faint of heart. You got to be awake to do that. You got to be strong to go humble. And you actually have to do that not for your sake, but for love's sake, for the person who's in front of you. So a lot to ask here. And I don't think this happens on the spot. I think this happens because you practice. And if you're not practicing these things, how in the world can you expect to ever be able to be that kind of person? And I think that's what we do. We practice becoming those kinds of people. And it's odd. We do it through funny mechanisms to learn how, like, learning how to do hard things translates to these more actually weightier things, these relationships that we say are the most important things in our lives. Mm.
Yeah, I love that. To extend the map metaphor, it almost seems like what you just described is like a compass to help in those moments navigate. Like, am I trying to take the high horse? Am I stepping onto this soapbox, or am I humbling myself and actually listening? That's so helpful.
We lie to ourselves, right? Huh. Like, I don't want to look bad in front of this guy who I clearly just offended and did the wrong thing in front of. So I want to maintain that appearance, and I can get locked into a role. I know people who are hearing my voice right now, they can relate to this, where, you know, you're in a conversation, you're in a fight, and you almost have an out-of-body experience when you step away from yourself, and you're like, that's not true. Like, why are you saying those things? And yet you're so caught in your role. You're like a method actor, and you can't get out of it. And you stay committed to the role. And all that's required is the courage to, like, stop, like, the video. Stop. Just tell the truth. Slow down. Be honest. And even as I'm saying this, I have a hunch there might even be some people who are listening who are going, like, ooh, I had one of those conversations this morning. And I might have a gold mine if I was willing to go there. And I'd encourage you to try. I'd encourage you to give it a shot. See what, at the level you can bear, go for that. Even if it's minimal, go for that. And see if you can't open something up. Or if you want to learn how to do this in the whole of your life, all the time, go to mwad.io and sign up. Go apply.
But it's probably not for you.
It's probably not for you. Probably don't want to.
Well, I think that's an appropriate ending, but I do want to spend just 1 minute digging into this, because I do think, yes, people hopefully at the end of this conversation at least have more evidence for the importance of honesty in their own lives, or more tools to see when that is and isn't happening in their lives. But for those that don't have a partner, I think to my conversation that I often have with my kids, this recurring conversation, they're upset, they're crying, what have you. And it's that out of body moment, but I'm the person that's outside of their body. And I'm asking, why are you upset? And they can't articulate it anymore. They've become so separated from that moment. But for those that don't have those little mirrors back to themselves of, you know, our own struggles, our own dishonesty, our own sin, if you want to use that, what are some other ways that we can step into this or put ourselves in the position to decide now to commit to something that will cultivate this in us more on the daily? How do we cultivate this practice?
Yeah. I mean, the ancients, they would just get alone by themselves. You know, solitude, it's powerful. You get bored with yourself pretty quickly if you're by yourself long enough. And you start getting curious if you can bear it. That's a very tall order, though. Solitude is a pretty significant heavy weight. Pascal used to talk about, this famous French philosopher would talk about, our biggest problem as human beings, this is a paraphrase, is our inability to sit by ourselves in our room. And imagine sitting by ourselves without a phone. You know, what would that be like? So I do think that could be helpful. Get out of the echo chambers of our feeds and our stuff. It can be helpful. But I do think it's hard if we're going to be alone. Like, here's the rub. Henry and I just talked about this. Like, when we get alone, at first, it just feels lonely. And we're just desperate to not feel lonely. But if you hang in there long enough, you get to a place of solitude. And actually, solitude, all the ancients knew this. That was like, if you could be okay by yourself, you could walk into any relationship and be honest, because you were practicing that thing. But if that feels like too big of a stretch because it sounds too whatever, I would just say, like, pick the thing, the thing that you don't like to do every day and do it every day. So for me, the beginning of my practice was, I talk about this all the time, was flossing my teeth. I never flossed my teeth, and I decided I was going to become a flosser. And if you want to become a flosser from day one and never miss a day for the rest of your life, I have an easy pattern to do. I took the cue from James Clear himself, the habit guy, and it's called habit stacking, where you put something that's already in place in your life that you're never going to miss second, and the new habit you want, slip it in just before it. So I decided I wanted to floss, and I just made a rule for myself that I didn't get to pee when I wake up in the morning until I flossed. And guess what? I've never missed a day of flossing since, because I'm really clear about it. So doing uncomfortable things, these are the building blocks, these basic fundamental things, because it raises agency and strength and awareness. And you start, I mean, we call this podcast Strong and Awake for a reason. That's the point. So doing things that make you strong and awake. Here's what doesn't make you strong and awake. All the things that you're drifting towards that are really easy. If that's your prescription for yourself to get to the kind of world that we've been talking about in this conversation, it will not get you there. That will not deliver. There's going to be some discomfort, and you can tell it's uncomfortable when you don't want to do it and you do it anyways. That's the trick. And if you can find some minimal viable practice to do that every day, get after it. You don't need men and women of discomfort. But if you want to guarantee that it's going to happen, like one choice to participate and we'll make the rest of your choices for you, and I promise you they're all going to be uncomfortable, come hang out with us, because we love to gently walk people through a process where this becomes normal and they actually have a pathway to, I think, the life that is truly life.
It's a good word. Well, for those of you who are listening and watching, we talked about a lot of things. And if you want to learn about all of those and expanded, extended episodes about each of those, we'll have those in the description or the episode show notes. And in addition to that, you'll also find more information about men and women of discomfort. Thank you, Dane. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mitch. See you next time. Men and Women of Discomfort is our membership community, and we are open to everyone. But keep in mind, our tagline is, it's probably not for you. If we're wrong about that, or if you want to find out for yourself, you can find us at mwod.io.
The information and material that we're sharing, both in this podcast or anything connected to Men or Women of Discomfort or Flying S Incorporated, is all for general information purposes only. You should not rely on this material or information on this podcast as a basis for making any kind of decision. We do our best to keep everything up to date and correct, and we do a lot of due diligence, but the responsibility is on you to make sure that you're in sync with your own medical professionals, that you wouldn't see what we're offering here as somehow a warranty or representation in any kind, expressed or implied, about this being complete, accurate, reliable, suitable, or comprehensive in any kind of way. It's critical you own your agency, which is at the heart of everything we do at Men and Women of Discomfort. We invite you to take the input that we're offering and consider it for yourself. And if it's helpful, please do take advantage of it. But if you do, it's you who is taking the opportunity, and we're assuming that you've done your due diligence with it. Thanks.